Imagine yourself as a professional photographer. Although your focus is on weddings, you have a dream that you cannot shake. Little do you know that this dream would lead to a series of events which would prepare you to go through unspeakable grief. In today's episode, I get to talk with a photographer who pursued a dream of taking pictures of dogs full-time. After a picture she took went viral, she lived through an overwhelming experience of being thrust into the spotlight on social media. However, navigating through the complex social dynamics prepared her for another event which would again thrust her into the spotlight, the tragic death of her husband. During our conversation, Hannah shares how she has remained positive through all the tragedies she has experienced. She also shares how social media can be a positive thing even though it's so often misused, and how she has used it to build a support community which spreads hope and comfort. Welcome to the Curiosity Shire, a place where we will uncover the stories behind ordinary people living extraordinary adventures. My name is Seth, and I'll be your host during today's conversation. I'm an American expat who's married to an Icelander, loves travel and aviation, and works as a registered nurse here in the city of Reykjavik. I bring my sense of adventure and endless curiosity into each conversation as I deconstruct what drives the people who are making an impact in our world. Well, Hannah, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Super excited to talk with you and chat with you about your story and motivation, inspiration, and how we can stay connected, especially with COVID. Yeah, I'm excited to dive into all these topics.
Oh, me too.
The reason I came across who you are was actually because of this photo, which I'd actually seen when it went viral the first time. So I knew this photo. And when I saw your comment on Instagram, I was like, what? She's the photographer? So it was really great to reach out and connect with you. And I would love to just start by talking about that photo.
Yeah, that photo changed my life, changed so many people's lives. It was such a crazy universe, like the universe handed it to all of us and said, run with it. So if that sounds odd,
I love it.
Yeah. Well, I told my husband, my late husband, 3 months prior, I wanted to take photos of dogs for the rest of my life. That was like the thing I wanted to do. And he totally laughed at me. And I think you've seen my TEDx talk where I talk about this, is he laughed at me and said, that'll never happen. Yeah. So we lived in this town of 300 people, middle of nowhere, northern Wisconsin, Lake Superior. And he just laughed at me. I had been a wedding photographer for a really long time and was burnt out. And so I sent it out to the universe. So the crazy part was, so I was taking photos and I kept running into this guy, John, and who was a friend of ours, and he would walk his dog on the same path that I would always walk my dog and our dogs. Mm-hmm. And I saw him once and he said, you know, I'd love if you'd come take photos of Shep at some point. And I said, well, sure. Yeah, I'd love to. And we kept like running into each other and it just never happened.
What kind of dog was Shep?
He was some sort of shepherd mix, husky mix. I'm not sure. He reminded me of an old dog that I had had who had actually been the reason I wanted to be a dog photographer. So I kept petting him and accosting poor John. Like, I love your dog, because that's what I do to people. Oops. Anyone who's walking. I know lots of people who are like that. I am one of them. And so late July, 9 years ago, he came. I think he called me. And he said, I think I'm going to have to put Shep down. He's not feeling good. Can you please come take photos of us in the water? And I said, yeah, sure. I'd be happy to. And the crazy part was I was not even supposed to be in town. Both of my grandmother's funerals were the weekend that he asked me, but I was not able to go. They were on the East Coast. I was not able to go to them because I had scheduled a wedding to shoot on the Wednesday of that week. So I couldn't get on a plane and fly to these things. And I was absolutely devastated.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And both of my grandmas, huge dog lovers, absolutely crazy dog lovers. And my grandma raised Irish wolfhounds. Her father raised Irish wolfhounds. My dad did it with her. And we'd always had dogs. We'd always had old dogs growing up. And it was like my grandmas gave me this photo shoot. They knew I'd need it. And so I took this photo of him with Shep in Lake Superior, less than 5 minutes. I mean, this dog was out cold, had no idea what I had captured. So I posted a photo of the back of the screen.
And what was he doing? Kind of dive into what he was doing with Shep in the lake.
Thank you. You'll have to, I've told this story so many times, like to random strangers.
Oh, I'm sure.
Sometimes I skip steps, so my apologies. So he would, he'd take Shep, he'd walk into the water with him, and he'd lay down. Like, Lake Superior usually is very cold, but it wasn't this time because the summer was so hot. So he decided to take Shep into the water. It's probably 3 to 4 feet of water, and he would just float, and he'd have Shep floating, and then Shep would have his head right here and just out cold. The whole reason why he does it is very much John's story, and I'm hoping that he'll do something and you know, tell the world about their relationship. But, you know, as the photographer who got to actually see this and take photos for him, I was just doing it as a favor to a friend, as a gift. And I had no idea what was going to happen next. So I post this screenshot of the back of my camera, and it went nuts. I posted on my Facebook page. So I had built my business using social media because I moved constantly as a kid. I moved every 2 years. And my way of connecting with people was my camera. So I would go to a new place and I'd take pictures. Well, social media for me was just like moving all the time, because I had my friends from third grade from Vermont were now friends with my friends from sixth grade from Peoria, Illinois. So it was, and my friends from France and all, you know, that's why I had this crazy audience from all over the world, was these were my friends. So
it was a way to bring all your friends together in one place.
And I had, as a kid, imagined this, thinking, oh, I wish so-and-so, I'm thinking of one in particular, I wish so-and-so could meet so-and-so, they're so similar, and we're friends now, and we post the, like, the three of us post the same memes, all the stuff, and it's so funny because they're friends now. So it's just,
crazy.
I love social media for that aspect. There's certain instances that I hate it, but I think we all are on that same playing field mentally. So anyway, I post this photo and goes nuts. And then I post the actual photo, like the photo of him, the edited slightly photo of him holding Shep in the water. And it goes, crazy is not a way to truly describe what happened. And it was a slow burn for the first 12 hours. And I'm shooting this wedding, and normally I would shut my phone off while I'm shooting. And I go, and my friend Barb is looking at me going, laughing at me, because I'm looking at my photo squealing. And this is when it hits like 900 likes. I'm going, oh my God, everyone loves my photo. And then it gets to 50,000 likes about 24 hours later. It went absolutely nuts. So, and John didn't have internet. So, and there was a very much a reason he's alone with his dog, you know, being together. He didn't have the internet. Mm-hmm. He lived in the woods. There's these things. So what people didn't realize was I was the person that everyone was inundating, which I have no, like, that's a business owner. But the things I learned from it and the community that I got because of this photo is incredible. And even 9 years later, I still interact heavily with many of the people that I received into my life with this gift from the universe. So this incredible virtual community, at first it was extremely stressful the first couple weeks because my voicemail is filling up. People are getting weirdly mean on the internet, telling me I kept this dog alive for my own good, that I was taking advantage of John, that I was the devil. They would make fun of some of my clients. That's what was weird, is I did senior photos. So I would post these beautiful photos of these young women, and there would be people saying, she's fat, or why did she wear that outfit, or her hair is ugly. Just mean things. And I got really worked up over it. And my husband said to me, why are you like this? This is not you at all. I am a very positive person. My sister calls me Positive Patty, or delusionally positive. And I tried to pivot to a more positive mindset, and that actually helped me immensely. And since I'm an analytical person, I, in order to deal with it, the whole, you know, gamut of things that were going on, I started writing down all the things that happened and sort of how a viral situation happens and what happens because of it, and who, like the boundaries that are dropped with certain people. People drove 8 or 9 hours to come to my house and walk in it without knocking. And my poor husband was a retired police officer, and he was not happy with people walking into his house without knocking and looking for John. People found John's house and took the dog out of the house and took it for a walk. I mean, people have very... Yes. People have very... they lose boundaries with social media. They feel like they are really part of the story, when in fact it's their own personal story projecting onto the situation. So that is something that I really had to teach myself, and then teach other people later on, is whatever reaction you're getting from other people is not about you, whether it's good or bad. People can be telling you you're the second coming of Christ. Don't internalize that, because they're just, you're whatever they're looking for. But also don't internalize you're the devil, you're stealing his soul, and you're making money off of him, and your clients are ugly. Like, don't internalize, or your photos suck, or whatever it is. Don't internalize that. These are people who don't really know you. Going back, I'm taking notes. Go ahead. Did you have a question?
No, I was going to say that is really insane, because you went from like a small time wedding photographer. Well, I mean, small time on social media, the point where you know, 900 likes was a big deal, to going viral, and then so many, like, thousands of people knowing who you are and like the story. That's huge from like a mental perspective even. And then you have the physical perspective of, you know, them coming and not acknowledging your boundaries and coming into your house. That's really difficult to deal with.
Yes, it can be difficult and also completely mentally overwhelming. It was very difficult for separate from, you know, John and I's relationship. It can be very overwhelming for the, and I teach this in some of my workshops on going viral, your significant other, anyone who's actually in a relationship with you, that's overwhelming for you, for them as well. And so it takes a lot of remembering to be not always constantly engaging with these people who don't really know you. And also acknowledging to your significant other that you are stressed by this situation, because unless you're truly engaging with them, these people on the internet, if you're the significant other, you don't understand the overwhelm mentally that can be happening in someone's head. So that's very important. And that is something that I truly tell people to, you know, don't internalize, but also be in constant communication with your significant other about what's going on, or your family members, or whomever needs to be interacted with.
That emotional support.
Yeah, exactly. Because it is stressful, and us people, like, there's going viral in a business way, and then there's your life blowing up viral. And those are two very different things. It kept going. And what was crazy is, so all these things were happening. I remember I had to reschedule a Today Show or Good Morning America interview to earlier in the morning because I was shooting a wedding. And they said, well, can you do it this time? I'm like, no, that's when the bride's walking down the aisle. Hold on. So it was like, no, sorry, Good Morning America, I have to do my job. So it's very interesting. So, being cognizant
priorities.
Priorities. Like, the bride is my job. It's her day. So it was very interesting. So the next 4 months were totally nuts. I traveled a lot for dog photography. I traveled all over the country. I did workshops. I did speaking engagements. I just did all these really cool things. Especially, I set up this program where people could fly me to the place where they wanted photos of their dogs, and then they picked a shelter where I did a workshop for photographers on better dog photos. And then I did photos of their pets that were the most, you know, the hardest to adopt. They'd been there for a while, they were old dogs. So I tried to turn this crazy cool community I suddenly had and figure out what they were interested in. They're obviously interested in dogs and they want to do good things. These are very philanthropic people. I said, okay, well, hire me and then let's go do some really good things. Because the universe had obviously handed me this photo. It was a good moment. People needed it really badly. I said, okay, what other good things can we do with it? And so we did that. And so this is going on and it's January. I have this amazing community and my husband's guide service had blown up. He was a hunting and fishing guide in northern Wisconsin. He was from the Red Cliff Reservation, which is right next to Bayfield. So he was born and raised there, Native American. I had married into a huge, amazing Native American family, and I was now related to everyone. And so he had created this incredible guide service on Lake Superior and was showing kids that you can come from a background where you're extremely poor, but you work hard and you create a business out of the thing that you love, which was Lake Superior. So his, we joke that he was the lake. So January 25th, I come back from a shoot that I had been gone for a week and we hadn't really seen each other a whole lot. And he had been guiding a whole lot. He's very busy and I had been gone a lot. And so we hadn't really seen each other and we decided to go out to dinner that night to like actually talk to each other. And we just hung out, talked about the fact that we needed to be more present in each other's lives. January 26th at 5:30 in the morning, he gives me a kiss goodbye. And I remember this kiss so well. And I'm sitting at my computer interacting with everyone and, you know, editing photos. It was just such a crazy time in my life. And I'm just really all about talking to people. And my phone is ringing off the hook. And I'm not answering it because I can't, like, I just can't. I can't answer it right now. And it keeps ringing. And then I hear this bang, bang, bang on the front door. I'm like, what is that? I get up and I open it up and it's our downstairs neighbor who was actually the police officer who had replaced Jim when he had retired from being a police officer. He had retired about two years prior, and because he wanted to be a guide full time. And I told him he needed to choose one of the two things because he wasn't getting any sleep.
Yeah.
And so he bangs on the door. He says, Jim's gone in. It doesn't look good. And I immediately just knew that it wasn't good. So what had happened was, and I'm crying and apologizing to Aaron, the officer that is telling me this, saying, I'm so sorry. Because Jim had come home a couple times had to tell people that something bad had happened to their spouse. And he had taken it so extremely personally and was just distraught.
Probably the worst.
Yes. Well, and it's a small town. Yeah. You know everyone. It was always someone that he knew or had grown up with. And so this is what was happening. And so his snowmobile had gone through the ice. He was in a bad spot, which, you know, accidents happen. It was no one's fault. And his snowmobile had gone through and he'd been in submerged for 45 minutes till his friends who, where we live, ice rescue is done on a wind sled, which is run by the fire department. So the fire department, where he had worked with for years and grown up with these guys and been a police officer with them and an ice rescue safety specialist with them, had to go get their friend out of the water, who then had to be sent to go tell their other friend that he was being taken to the hospital. So they were working on him. We got to the hospital and they said, you need to come in and identify him. So they're working on him. I go in with my mother-in-law and they've got tubes in him and they're doing CPR. And the reason that we had to identify him is when he went in during the shock, all his hair turned red. So the people, two of the EMTs were his high school, well, a grade school and a high school teacher who didn't recognize him. So I don't know if it was shock for everyone, but I went in and his hair was red. So he was Native American and Danish. So you could like, I'm not joking about it, but it was so weird. And other widows and people who've gone through traumatic loss have talked about the fact that this actually happens. People look different. It's very odd. So I digress. So they put him on a helicopter because they can't revive him. But because it's a federal body of water, they can't pronounce him deceased and they can't stop working on him in this very small hospital in the middle of nowhere. So they have to put him on a helicopter and fly him to Duluth, Minnesota. And they put me in a car and drive me to the hospital. And I am talking to my friend who's driving me to the hospital and the doctor calls me and says, I'm so sorry, Mrs. Hudson, we couldn't revive him. And all I can say is thank you. Because what had happened in the hospital room was I literally saw him. He was gone. And I kept telling them, he's not there. He's not there. Please stop. Please stop. Please stop. He's not there. And he's looking at me. Mm-hmm. Like, I know he's like, literally he's there. And I said, thank you so much. I didn't want you to work on him anymore. So I go to the hospital and the nurse walks up as I'm walking in. And is crying. He is crying. He says, I couldn't save him. I watched him on TV all the time. I couldn't save him. I watched his ice safety seminars. I can't believe this. And that was my first moment of realizing when you're a widow, you spend a lot of time, and not in a bad way, you go into this shock of helping other people deal because you are in such shock that you can sort of shut it off and go. So I end up walking in I have cousins who live all over the world. I have 7 cousins. He has over 100 first or second cousins. So I walk into the hospital waiting room because everybody on social media knows this is going on because I had written, because I had no filter, FU ice fishing, because that was like the thing I put. So everyone knows. And I walk into the hospital waiting room. And there's a ton of people there. People I don't even know because they're related to him, but I hadn't met them. So I go in and I'm in with him and he's obviously deceased. Everyone's in the other room and they have to bring up a medical examiner from the Twin Cities. And I'm like, stopping them from going in there because his best friends have decided to come in and, say goodbye to him. So I'm literally, as the widow, pushing a medical examiner with a thing. And I laugh about it now because it's so surreal and weird. And you may have to edit these parts out because it's like something out of a movie. So.
No, it's probably, probably when you're going through that experience, you felt detached from reality.
Because
when you go through something that traumatic, it's just like you don't have time. The grief comes later, it's just the shock and just, oh, this isn't real. I need to help them deal with the grief.
Yeah. Oh, very much so. And that's what I talk about is for most people who've gone through traumatic loss, who are the ones who are either the significant others or were with the person, grieving doesn't really happen till almost 6 months later because you're so out of it. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of people, the second year of loss is even worse because you're finally, it's not that you haven't processed or you're somehow delayed in grief or stuck. You literally didn't feel anything previously. So, and that's a whole other conversation. However, so I'll go back. So I go home after I drive. I have a driver home to my house, and in my, like I said, I was stressed before. I become very analytical, and I suddenly realize this is going viral in the same way with the same people as the John and Shep thing. So I notice something with viral things. People want to be a part of it and they don't have boundaries and they want to throw money at things. So with like John and Shep, people just wanted to throw money at Shep's care. It was awesome. It was how he got another good year of life. With me, it was people again. I had to rethink things because people were saying horrible things. He shouldn't have been in that spot. He deserved to die. All kinds of things on the internet because they're trolls and they have something else going on in their life. And if I hadn't had the John and Shep thing happen previously, I probably would have absolutely lost my mind with the way that the internet went semi-viral in a different way with his passing. Because he was so active on social media and was on a bunch of TV shows and other things, his death went viral in a different way, with his audience and my audience. And so I had to look at, people wanted to donate money, people wanted to donate food in that same way. And I had this incredible community that was formed around this, and I had to rethink and go, okay, the positive. Like, can you imagine some widow going, I have to think of the positive here? But that was the only way I could, that's how my brain works. It's the only way is to deal with things, and that's why my sister calls me delusionally positive, is to go through these things and see, okay, what can we get out of it in a good way to take care of myself, like for my own mental health. And so I embraced it and said thank you, and occasionally w learn to shut off my phone and be present. That was another thing that I had learned, be present with people. But it was weird because at the funeral, like over 1,000 people showed up, and people drove to see me, who I had met because of the John and Shep photo, and in line, and they want to have photos with me. It was very odd. So they, because I was, so, to them, I was some sort of celebrity, which wouldn't even in my mind, like, I don't think that about myself, but they wanted, and then one woman wanted me to sign a print. Like, it was very surreal, to say the least. So all of a sudden, all these people start inviting me out to visit them, to take photos of their dogs, to help me heal. So I talk about like my grandmothers gave this to me. Well, yeah, they did. I have this incredible business of taking photos of dogs, and I get to fly to these places and visit these people that I just have known online. Lots of them are either cancer survivors or widows themselves, or they help someone, get through life in some hard time in their life. And so they know somewhat what I'm going through. And so I had this amazing community who just flew me places, and I got to talk to people and meet people and get my yayas out by taking photos of their very amazing dogs. So it was like therapy for me. So that the universe gave me that. And so the short of is I spent about 6 years taking photos of dogs, but also teaching people how to handle the internet when something bad happens. Because I'm good at that. So, yeah, that's the
Yeah,
short.
and you're good at it because you've literally gone through the fire with that and had to. It's kind of a survival at this point. Maybe first off, that's an incredible story, and I just love how it kind of all comes around, how the story with John and Shep, was a catalyst for building your community that later came back and helped to heal you after your husband passed away. And I love that. And I'd love to talk a little bit about the power of social media, and the good that can come out of it with your delusionally positive mindset.
Amazing things can come from social media if we look at it in a positive way. Yes, it can be horrible, and you can get into infighting, and there can be lack of communication, there can be miscommunication, there can be misinformation, as we all know with the loveliness of COVID. But there also can be incredible community fundraising, free information. It can be a place to get support. It doesn't matter. The cool thing is, I saw these communities coming together, and I have seen this with my cancer journey as well. No, it doesn't matter what time zone you are. It doesn't matter what, your financial means are, your socioeconomic status, any of that. It doesn't matter. I am friends on Facebook with a woman who was, and I've been friends with her for 9 years, which is so cool, who has been through health issues, mental health issues, about with homelessness, and you know, she is back in an assisted living place. And I've been friends with her this whole time, and she was probably my number one support person on social media and my inspiration for getting through all of this craziness that has happened in the past year with my health. It was her. Like, she That's doesn't crazy. Even know she's my inspiration. I've told her, and she's like, yeah. But no, she is. And so you get these people who, we have this whole thing with finding lost dogs. People use social media to help others. They, you know, just sharing something. I hate the fact that GoFundMe has to be used for healthcare in this country, but that's another conversation. But the fact that you can use social media to ask people for help if you really truly you just need help. You with my Lyme disease battle, my biggest strides in getting information on how to get care for myself and find a doctor who could actually, you know, not cure me but give me the right medications, because the general medical community hasn't studied it a whole lot, is from a Lyme group. And they're the ones who helped me find my Lyme doctor, who is 2 hours from here. So it's, you know, it does, you know, kill our critical thinking skills sometimes, social media does. However, there are really, really good things about it, but you just have to ignore the bad to a point. And then, you know, look for the good, because positive gets positive, negative gets negative. So you're just, it's incremental.
I absolutely love that. And I agree that it's kind of what you look for. There will always be trolls, even off social media. You know, there's bad actors, but I think social media gives them a new courage, because they can kind of hide behind a screen and they can just write whatever they want, say whatever they want. There's no ramifications. And yet, a lot of times we still internalize those messages. And that's why it can be especially harmful. So understanding that and then just taking the good can really help with your mental health as you're on social media. And the thing I love about it is connecting. I mean, that's how I connected with you, you know, on Instagram. And so it can connect you from all over the world.
Yeah, I love it. That's my thing. And we talked about, I moved all the time. I have friends and family all over the world. And I wouldn't be able to have that if I didn't have social media. And so for me, if I'm stuck somewhere because I can't travel, I can get my cousins to send me a freaking Instagram thing from Frankfurt. So I'm like, I need to see something different. Or go with my friends in Belize that I met randomly because I went down to do photos of a cat shelter, like, after my husband died, and I met a bunch of friends down there. So I love it because it connects. And I'm a connector. I just love interesting people and talking to them, because everyone has a story.
Yeah.
And everyone needs to hear that story.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned briefly about your cancer. I was wondering if we could talk about that a little bit, and how going through your grief prior has helped you cope with the cancer diagnosis and that journey as well.
Yes. So that's what's really interesting to me, is the grief process from losing my husband. It's very similar, if not the same, to the grief process of finding out I had breast cancer. So this is one thing I tell people, grief is not a competition. I will see people saying, oh, my grief is so much less than theirs. They had this and this and this happen. Or mine is way worse than theirs. I don't know why they're upset. It doesn't matter what it is that happened to you. In your brain, the chemicals are processing it the same. So one grief is not worse than the other. You're going to process things in the same way. So when I found out I had breast cancer, and of course this is hindsight 2020, because just like when my husband passed away, like you look back and go, oh, that's why I did that. But when yeah. I found out, I didn't cry, I didn't do anything. I have to back up and say, cancer for me, because I've had such crazy things happen in my life, and I've had so many diseases that we haven't been able to figure out what they are, autoimmune diseases, Lyme disease, I know I have something else, but I can't remember, and that's ridiculous. But when I got my cancer diagnosis, I actually was like, oh, my oncologist still laughs at me, because I said, oh, good, we've studied this one. I'm actually relieved it's this and not what they thought it was, MS possibly. I'm like, no, there's too much weirdness. So what was crazy was I was actually relieved, but I have a wonderful therapist who just also laughed at me and said, oh, you're just, not you're just, she didn't minimize it. She said, is this similar to when your husband died and you were just, you went into the shock mode? I went, oh, yes. So it is, you go into the shock mode. And one of the best things I did when Jim died was I journaled. So one of the skills that I learned, it's very important, and it doesn't mean you have to sit down and write this whole like long thing about reflecting on your feelings or anything like that. You can write down short things. But what is important is 6 months down the line, when you feel like you're stuck or you're upset with yourself because you think you haven't grieved enough or something like that, you can look back and see the process and see how much progress you've made. Because a lot of the times, like you have mentioned, you go into shock and you just go into this mode of just get it done, get it done, get it done. And so when you sit down, like for me, I had a mastectomy. I chose to just have a flat closure and just be done with it because I didn't want to have to deal with more surgeries afterwards. So for me, there was the grief of the cancer and knowing it can come back, and the grief of losing a body part, a part of my identity.
Yeah.
There are so many levels of grief there, and being able to go back and just write down what you're feeling and being able to go back later and say, okay, I processed this. This is what happens. I am doing better. But also acknowledging your pain rather than dismissing it.
Those are incredible, incredible resources to share. And I'm curious, is there one thing that stands out as something that has helped you remain positive throughout, I mean, the cancer, losing your husband, or is it just like your natural ability to see the bright side? I won't say bright side, because there's never a bright side to tragedy, but like being able to get through. I'm curious, what is something that stands out to you that has helped you remain positive?
The fact that there will always be something good to look forward to. No matter where you are in your life, you can just keep going. Whether it's an hour is a new hour or the next day is the next day, it's very true. You can be at the hardest point in your life and acknowledge the fact that you're there. And just say, I'm just going to keep going. And you just, but also give yourself grace. I say give yourself grace, time, and space. Give yourself the grace, time, and space to be depressed, to be distraught, to acknowledge the fact that you are not happy about it. But then be in that moment so you can feel those feelings and then, you know, go on from there. Because I think people want to push those feelings down and not deal with the grief right then. And what was interesting is I didn't really deal with my husband's grief with my husband passing for about 2 years. I mean, I did to a point, mentally. I had a lot of therapy, but I didn't deal with some of the things that I should have, and it delayed it very much. And so so these are some of my lessons, and I have to remember to talk about these things, because I think I come across as, oh no, I just was fine, and go, no, 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 no. I'm using what I learned to help other people. And so I got very sick because
a lot of work under the surface.
Oh, lots. So a lot of my autoimmune issues are from cortisol, from and inflammation from not dealing with some PTSD symptoms. So I tell people, be present in your grief when you can be, because that helps cry, because that helps you physically and chemically be a healthy person. And you need to be a healthy person in order to be truly resilient. You have to be able to take care of yourself. You have to be able to take care, if you've got kids, you have to take care of them. You have to take care of maybe a sick family member. If this is a, you know, a long-term grief situation where you're dealing with someone who is getting sicker and sicker and sicker and sicker, you can't just shove it down. Even if it's in the bathroom on the floor crying for 5 minutes, you have to do that. You really have to be, you have to do it. And that's what I tell people, is that's not being weak. Being strong is acknowledging that process of being physically able to cry. And then being able, you know, giving yourself grace to do that, to move on.
And I think it's so important, especially for men, to hear that, because society has this toxic like image that men shouldn't cry, they should be strong. But crying is one of the strongest things you can do, feeling that emotion, being present with what you're going through.
Yes, very much so. And my significant other, Sam, he is actually an Afghanistan war veteran. He lost his leg in Afghanistan, and he does a lot of energy work, Reiki, mindfulness, breathing, meditation, in order to help himself through that. And so he's been a real, he's been a source of information and strength for me, because we've both been through our very hard moments separately. And he reaches military guys to talk about energy work and mindfulness. And so getting that conversation with men, like especially big, like the macho testosterone driven men, is really cool, because that's health for everyone. That's health for people in their families, for themselves, everyone. So I'm excited to do some more stuff with him to talk about those things.
Yeah, I love it. And if anybody wanted to get in touch with you or see, learn more or take some of your classes, learn how to cope with their own grief, how can they do that? What's the best way to find you online?
Many places. You can go to hshcommunications.com. Yeah. My late husband called me the Facebook.
Sounded Lucy. Funny when I asked it.
Yeah. Okay. hshcommunications.com is my website, but Facebook is hannahstonehousehudson.com. Instagram is hannahstonehousehudson. Instagram is hannahstonehousehudson. LinkedIn is Hannah Stonehouse. Like, it's all over the place. So
you'll
just
find
Google me.
Love it. Thank you so much for taking the time to share your story, and I'm excited to share this and just to learn more about how I think talking about our stories can really encourage one another, because we're all going through stuff, and just reminding us that it's okay to cry, it's okay to be present with our grief, and there's always something better coming up. I love that. So thank you so much for sharing.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This is awesome. I love it. I can't wait to hear the rest of your podcast.
Thank you for visiting the Curiosity Shire and listening to today's conversation. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend so they can be a part of this community as well. This episode was edited and produced by Agnes Grettastotter, with music by John Bentley and Grand Mercy. And I'm your host, Seth Sutherland, wishing you all the best until we see you again here in the Curiosity Shire.